The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
It's a look at the headlines, the great moments, the numbers, and the love and nostalgia that makes us baseball fans. This is Box Score Heroes. Hey everybody, it's me, Ken Napsack, for a special edition of Box Score Heroes, the third of the main show. And here's what I love doing with this podcast feed. The only set show we'll release it is the Power Rankings edition of Box Score Heroes. You'll usually get that every Monday morning, late Sunday into Monday morning. We look back on the weekend baseball and rank it in the our special Box Score Heroes way. But right now, until further, and I guess I should say behind the bag, on Fridays, but possibly Saturdays too. So all that rambling, it lets you know, we're just going to have fun opening up the microphone, opening up the phone lines, and talking baseball all through the week when we want to. When I have time, when you have time, that's the joy. Baseball's always there for us to talk about. Though we are going to talk about a little bit of that today, of will baseball always be there this year? But the first thing I wanted to talk about today, in putting together the power rankings last week, it's an off kilter look at the goings on in the week of baseball. But I think I overlooked something, and I want to correct that there, and I want to definitely talk about it here. This is beyond just a weekly power ranking. This is historic. We haven't really talked on Box Score Heroes about Alyssa Nacken, who is the first base coach or on the coaching staff of the San Francisco Giants after being an intern with the club since 2014. She was a softball standout at Sacramento State before joining the Giants organization and now is on Kapler's staff. And this is absolutely historic. She became the first female on-field coach in a major league game, uniform sent to the Hall of Fame. And it's really impressive and really interesting. And I got to say, it's something I growing up didn't think I'd ever see, because that's what you're raised to think. Now, This could lead to a female athlete being on the field and as a player. And was it Fox that had that show idea? And that's always been kind of an interesting thing. You know, there's some, as much as we don't want to divide the lines, the gender lines. Yeah. You know, okay. Are you going to see a female offensive lineman in the NFL? I don't know. You might. That's the important thing. Growing up, I was taught and told you wouldn't see that. So here we are now, we're seeing it. But it makes me think, though, of my little league year, sixth grade. We had a girl on our team, right? And she was the only one in the league. And I actually plan to write about this in some other content creation way of what I remember from that. Because I don't even remember her name. I think I have a team photo somewhere. I was 12. I don't remember many of the names of the kids on that team. Memory fades, kids, memory fades, but I remember her. And this is 1988 range, 87, 88 range, I think, when I was playing. And she was the only girl in this all, boys league. And again, it wasn't divided by that, right? It's just, we know. And while we could get into the discussion of the natural athletic power, right? If you want to say, I go to the football example of just men naturally being bigger and tougher. We can have that conversation. But the problem is, when that girl was on the team, our team, she was on my team, one girl in a team of, in a league of, I think, 12 teams, with 15 kids on it, you do the math. And then also, this is in Arroyo Grande Valley Little League. We were, a double A, whatever it was, double A, triple A team. And then you had down to 5-year-olds and up to 14, 15-year-olds, right? Babe Ruth League is what it was called. She was the only girl. It wasn't so much that when she showed up to our first practice that me and the rest of my teammates thought, she can't compete physically. That wasn't the first thought. The first thought was, girls like baseball? That's weird. And as you grow up, you find that that's, of course, not true, but that is ingrained early on. So from that moment, I remember the story. I remember how how brave that girl was. I'm going to have to dig up the name. It's unfortunate I don't recall. I can see her. And there was one particular, she was in right field, and a ball was hit over to her, and it was a game. And she put her glove down, good form, you know. The ball's not going to get through there. She held the glove down, and the ball stopped. The ball just rolled on the grass and stopped in front of her, and she kind of froze. And the whole team laughed, and the opposing team laughed. And I think about that moment often, because she showed up to practice again and showed up to the next game, and she never stopped. She never stopped. I don't know where that girl is now. I don't know who she went on to become, but I hope she looks back at that with pride. I hope she is coaching baseball somewhere. And I remember that. So from that and me growing up in the 80s, thinking about that one girl in a sea of young boys playing baseball and looking at Alyssa Nackin now, it's I'm so happy and thrilled for it. And it's something, again, that I never would have thought. And this does open up doors. It's small. This is a first base coach. Well, okay, yeah, she can time the pitcher, tell him when to run, work on some base running. Oh, yeah. That's simple. Now, this is the first step to something more. And the Giants and Gabe Kapler are thinking outside the box, and it's interesting. And it's different, and I keep hearing that a lot, outside the box. Sports is a copycat business. It's just what it is. Perhaps even life is a copycat business. This is why I think this is important. If Alyssa Nackin shows up and the Giants players are like, yep, this is working. She's great. Other teams are going to look around and go, well, we want in on something that's good for us. Now, unfortunately, I don't even know if I agree with this. This puts a lot of pressure on her, right? It's that inherent sexism thing of, hey, we got a female-directed superhero movie. If it fails at the box office, we won't get any more. You know, like that's there. That's present, and that's unfortunate, and it shouldn't be like that. So I don't want to suggest that there's that kind of pressure on her, whether there is or not. I don't want to suggest that that's the case, because what's the failure? Every Giant player gets thrown out trying to steal second, and that's going to be her fault? No, I don't know. But other teams are going to look around, and they're going to see how this works. They're going to see how it's received, and the walls start falling down. There'll be a female general manager. There's already Kim Nguyen for the Dodgers, I believe, got very close, was considered for some jobs. That'll start falling. We got Jessica Mendoza in the broadcast booth for the ESPN Sunday Night Club, and I like it, and I like her. I know not everyone's a fan, and some people might not be fans, not just because She's a woman, but I enjoy her experience. She's a better, more insightful athlete and commentator than I am on the sport, and I sit there and learn. And I have more of a problem with A-Rod in the booth than her, if that's where you want to go. And it will happen. And as far as a player, yeah, it could happen. I think it will happen. How could it? Would that player look like? I don't know. Perhaps it is a pitcher. That seems to be the easiest one. I see that. I think that was the TV show. That's what it was based on. But who's to stop there? Who's to say why? In the early 90s, I was a big fan of hockey at the time. I still enjoy hockey, but back then I was really big. And I do remember, man, I have all of the cards. We talk about baseball card memories. I have hockey memories. I have the complete set of the Minot Rayom set. She was the goalie. It worked her way up and played in the NHL for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Short cup of coffee, but she did it. She's on the books. She got there. And what a fascinating story. It'll happen in baseball. It'll happen. This is just the first step. And you out there listening might pound your fist and hate it, and that's your right. I understand from one point of view, because I grew up with that going, no. Girls can like baseball. I learned that. Girls can like baseball. They can't play with the boys. I've been there. I get it. This is a challenge to that. This is a challenge to your way of thinking and my way of thinking. I'm copping to it. I grew up with that. But I also grew up with that memory of the one girl on my little league team, that one girl in our entire city's little league. And think about it often, about how I wish I do, I do remember. Wish I remember that name. How I wish I had been more aware of what that meant at the time. So now this time around, listen, Akin on first base for the Giants, I'm absolutely going to be aware of what that means. Good job, Alyssa. Play ball indeed. Well, playing ball will be, well, that's the big question. After it seems like half the Florida Marlins organization, insert your Florida jokes here, came down with COVID-19. Now, again, we talked about this on Behind the Bag. We're going to probably talk about it again on Behind the Bag this coming weekend. This was bound to happen. This was part of the plan. Major League Baseball knew that players were probably going to test positive during the season. Not all the players are in bad health, of course. Some are asymptomatic. Some Freddie Freeman tells his story, 104.5 degree fever, what it was and how bad it is. It could be bad. But it's not the players who are, in theory or in thought, a picture of health. It's also some of the clubhouse staff, and that's been part of the problem too. And those aren't necessarily the best athletes in the world or in great shape. Some of them are older. You don't know. And this is my fear. It looks like we're okay for now. Rob Manfred says the games are going on. We had a couple postponements. Marlins will sit a few out. And if they can't put a competitive team on the field, then they'll deal with that. I think throw all, I saw our pal Cody Decker, recently retired from pro ball, saying, I'm ready. I got my bat and glove. Put me in, coach. I'd love something like that. What a story. So we're going to have some games, but this is my fear. And this is not based on some great insight or anything like that. I'm not a doctor or anything, but like the liability is real. I don't think any of those Marlin players are going to become seriously ill or worse, die. I don't think so. We don't know, but I don't think so. But I worry about the clubhouse staff. I worry about someone working with the organizations, not just the Marlins, any organization. The Marlins were on the field with the Phillies. Juan Soto tested positive after playing with his teammates. Matt Davidson of the Reds tested positive after playing in the game. First DH for the Reds, right? In a non-American League game. That's where the liability comes in. One of those clubhouse attendants gets sick and, God forbid, dies. The team in the league will be on the hook for it. And that, to me, will be what eventually could pull the plug. I don't want to pull the plug. I am more excited than I thought I'd be for this brand of baseball. None of the little things are bothering me in terms of the presentation of the game. I've been tricked. A few friends have texted me, oh, man, I don't like the virtual crowd or the cardboard cutouts or the fake sounds. I often just have baseball on in the background, like I'm sure a lot of you do. And while doing some work or keeping my head down, I've looked up and just been fooled. Oh, good crowd today at Dodger Stadium. They look like MLB The Show. Though I'm very aware of the cardboard cutouts and all that stuff. It's just in that moment when you're not thinking about it and you're just looking down, you're hearing the sounds of the game, you're hearing the roar of the crowd piped in as it may be. I don't know. I've fallen for it every time and it's felt good to have baseball back. So I don't want this to end. I'm worried, though. I think a lot of us should be worried if this happens again, happens to another team. And again, if one person goes down, seriously, knock on wood, I don't want that at all. But that's where the fun will have to end. Should baseball have played in a bubble like some of the other leagues are, NBA, NHL? Sure. Yes. Makes sense. I do. And I'm not, I get we're not supposed to be huge fans of Rob Manfred, but I understood what he was saying in his address the other day on MLB Network that, hey, the logistics and the realities of Major League Baseball playing in a bubble are just a little different than the NBA, or maybe even the NFL, which hasn't, I don't know if they're committing to that, right? I don't know. I don't follow football as closely, but you put all these teams, all these players, bigger rosters than the NBA, even bigger rosters than the NHL, the need for more facilities, you'd have to almost build a baseball league under a dome to make this work. So in order for us to have baseball, they couldn't play in the bubble. And I understand that was the risk. We'll see if those risks were worth it. the idea that's been put forth that, hey, if a certain, the Marlins right now, if they miss these games and we can't make them up, we're trying to keep on a tight schedule. The teams might not every team will play 60 games, which was similar to a little bit what happened in 1981, the strike shortened and strike split season. I don't particularly like that, but I'm okay with it. All right. But it opens up the problems. If I was a fan of any team, I'm a Yankee fan, but hey, I'm going to assume the Yankees are going to do okay, right? There you go. Pride comes before the fall. Yankee pride comes before the fall. Hope you, hopeful Red Sox fans. Let's say the Yankees only get to play 57 games and they miss the playoffs by 2 games. That's not going to be good. You're going to find a lot of people having problems with that. You all might not have a problem with that if the Yankees are in that boat, but I think in general people will. So that's a big question. But for right now, look, I'll take it. If that's the game, that's the game. We have got to pay attention to Austin Riley's homer. I can't play clips too much. I understand, I don't have the expressed written consent from Major League Baseball, the commissioner's office. I just want you to hear this sound. Austin Riley, Sunday, the 26th of July, versus the Braves. Braves are already up 11-1. I'm sure a lot of you have seen it. This is amazing.
That one is hammered left field.
That is why I love the game of baseball. The sound. I'm glad there wasn't a real crowd drowning that out. That is a pure crack of the bat. That is powerful. And the swing was great. And he's a righty. Normally, right-handed swings aren't associated with beauty. That one was big swing, big home run. I just had to shout that out. It's one of those baseball moments that just keeps bringing you back. I'll watch him. It's like watching me. I'll watch a good slider. I love those, super edits of super cuts of pitchers with curveballs, and even like love a good fastball. One of my favorite things growing up. I love closers. I know saves aren't always, one of those stats that might not be what they used to. If you're in fantasy baseball, the era of drafting Trevor Hoffman at a high price is over. Closers change often, closers by committee, all those kind of things. And all of it kind of works. I can get behind the stats of all of it, but I just love, perhaps because I came of age in the late 80s, Eckersley starts coming in, and you had Gossage and Suter. I loved Quisenberry. Gene Garber used to shut things down to Colvay. A lot of submariners back in the day. Raleigh Fingers. So you had that was like an early version of the super closer. And then here I am, Eck with his flowing mullet, just striking everyone out. ERA under 1. The super closer was born. I forgot, Dave Rigetti. I was a Yankee fan. I loved Rigetti back in the day too. Set the save mark at 86, right? 46 saves, I believe. That was smashed by Thigpen. So I love that. So I miss that. But I just love watching closers finish games. It's similar to the Riley home run. Boom, big swing, big cut, big sound. Love it. But game on the line, 2 strikes, pitch, swing, miss, celebrate. I don't know. I just always love super cuts of that. It's a weird thing. It's a weird thing. Watching Big Lee Smith just blow down a batter and get a high five from the catcher. It's something I've always enjoyed. So it's those little sounds, those little moments, and this Austin Riley home run. I just had to play it. It's just too good.
That one is
just like batting practice. Good job, Austin Riley. We are almost out of here for this edition of Boxer Heroes. I want to do a quick card memory. You've been doing that. Thanks to all been watching the card openings. We did the 1991 Tops on video and audio for the podcast feed. We'll be doing more of those soon. Have some guests for that coming up soon, lining up some guests. I got my 88 score pack packs sets, actually. They're all open. I think it's almost a complete 88 score set. Maybe one or two missing. I don't know. The 88 score did something really cool. They honored Reggie Jackson, and I have the complete set here. A little dinged up, so hey, it's probably not worth much. And I have one duplicate. What year? Yeah, you guessed it. The year he's with the Orioles. I was fascinated with this little subset here in 88 score when I was growing up because Reggie was just retiring. 87 with the A's, finishes up. 15 home runs, 43 RBIs, .220 average. He was 40, I do believe, if memory serves. And he Yeah, about 40-41. So, you know, if he had held on one more year, might have gotten back to the World Series with the A's. It would have been interesting. Said it was like Dave Parker kind of took that role of the aging DH with the A's. So I was fascinated because Reggie was one of the first superstars. And even though I was alive when he was playing and stirring the drinks out in New York there, he was already epic to me, and he was like finishing his career, so it was kind of weird. I watched a couple games '87 with him, and had the TV on in '86 watching him with the Angels, so he was one of those early superstars in my life as a baseball fan. He was of epic proportions, and his stats, 563 home runs, just seemed like otherworldly. And I knew of Aaron and Ruth, Mays, all those big numbers, but Jackson was like, I'm watching a guy with 500 home runs play the game, and it's crazy. His career was interesting, 68-75 with the A's, and I love that card. It's such a young, clean-shaven Reggie, and it's got the stats, man. It's got the stories, and that's it's one of the reasons we do baseball stories here. As baseball fans, you just kind of wasn't just the stats. It was you read who they were and their accomplishments and what they did, and the stories were amazing. And I was always mesmerized by the year in Baltimore. And I didn't fully understand, you know, he had been traded, Charlie O, battling against the looming free agency and being basically shipped to Baltimore for 1 year. It was always so weird to me. It was like not a time warp, but just like another, another multiverse. Seeing Jackson taking this big cut in the orange of the Orioles was always so weird to me. But then it goes to the Yankees, 77-81. Only a short time, but he's so associated with the Yankees. Which was, and you guys will hear me say this, it was the power. That's the power of the Yankees. You're there for a short while. You put a good couple years up in pinstripes. You're a legend. 77-81. That to me is one of the more explosive runs for any player in baseball in a short run, just putting your stamp on it. I loved it. And the California Angels won. Again, that's where, and I loved Reggie that he had a little bit of the classic 80s glasses. The batting up, you look at this photo now, and he looks like a player from a different era. But back then, it was just the epitome of cool. Those Angels uniforms. The Angels, remember the 80s uniforms? They had those like pullover uniforms with the elastic belt lines. They're all kind of, that's wow, different era. But I look at this photo now. This is what I love doing, the card memories. It's just like, it's all there. It's like, it seems like it's still, I'm watching Reggie Jackson on Channel 5, where I was growing up with Joe Torre as the color guy. I think it was Bob Starr. Now Bob Starr was the king. Who is the Angels announcer was really good, along with Joe Torre. And then the final one, the A's, which was so modern because that the A's in 87 switched to that uniform that they still kind of wear to this day. There's been some alternate versions to it, but it's just now that seems modern. Anyways, that's my memories of Reggie Jackson, the first of the great superstars for me, the one that a lot of the superstars that started popping up I'd compared to in my mind, Reggie Jackson. Got a call here. Want to play? This was comes in from our pal Pete Rich. Here you go, Pete.
Hey, Ken, Indians fan, Pete Rich here, and I was just calling in to give my opinion about the new extra innings rule with the player starting on second base. My team fell victim to that in the second game. They scored their run, bunted him over. And then they didn't even get a hit to drive him in. Sacrifice fly, I believe it was. I realized we had the same opportunity as they did with the player starting on second, but it just felt so unearned. And even if my team would have won, using that same opportunity, I still think it's a cheap win. You didn't earn that player on second. And I just don't like it. All right. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Pete. Man, that's some great stuff. I understand your pain. I think there's a lot of things that will stick around baseball, perhaps the playoff format, perhaps DH in the National League. There's a lot of things that will stick around baseball after this weird 2020 season. One of the ones I hope is hope goes away is the runner on second base. Was Otani officially the first one, right? Got caught in that rundown. It is cheap to me. This is like, I don't know, like a football starting on the 20 or something, and you know, kickoffs, and you know, just, I don't know. I don't want to get too grumpy down that path, but yeah, it's something I don't like. I do feel it's kind of cheap. I get why they're doing it. I get it. Protecting the strain on pitchers during this weird season. But I feel you got more players on the roster. Just keep that going. You got 30, you're going to go down to 28, you're going to go down to the 26, which was new for this year. Keep it at 28. Give me some extra players. Keep it at 30. So you have four more pitchers. You know, you got the rule for the three batters. You're not going to be having pitchers change in and out, you know, but the runner on second, the 10th inning, I love an extra inning game. You know, it gets exhausting, but it's full of tension on its own because one swing can finish it with a home run. But now the runner on second, exactly what Pete's saying, bunt him over, sacrifice fly, and game's over. And, you know, I guess it's fine. You just got to keep that runner from scoring. There it is. It's simple. That's what you got to do. And some teams are and some teams aren't. So it's not going to ruin my fun. And I don't think it's going to ruin Pete's fun. But yeah, as a baseball fan, you know, passionate baseball fans that we are, that one sticks with me just a little bit there. But it's there. Pete, thanks for the call. If you have a call, particularly if you want to share your favorite moment of the week and have it air in the Power Rankings edition of Box Score Heroes every Monday morning, leave me a message through Anchor. That's all you have to do. Just go over there to the app, press the leave a message button, put your phone up to your ear, and you got 59 seconds to share your thoughts on something baseball related. Trivia question time as we get ready to wrap up this edition here. Name the first pitcher to win four Cy Young Awards. If you can name it off the top of your head. I have not looked at the answers. I have it in front of me here. I'm trying to work through it. Honest to God, trying to work through it with you. I think it's Koufax. Now, here are our choices. Those I do have in front of me. A, Sandy Koufax. B, Randy Johnson. C, Jim Palmer. D, Steve Carlton. Now, I say Koufax, and I think to myself, well, now, wait, hold on. Five golden years? Drysdale picked up one during that time, right? I can't remember. And then I start thinking, well, maybe it was Randy Johnson. Trick question. I'm thinking old history. Then we go new. I think it might be Johnson. Palmer, no. Carlton, no, which means one of them might be the answer. That's how I work through these questions. You literally pour through the memory. So let's see what we got. What did you have? Name the first pitcher to win four Cy Young Awards. We flip it. Yep. There we go. I was wrong. It is exactly as I joked. It's Steve Carlton. The tall lefty won his four Cy Young Awards pitching for Philadelphia during an 11-year period running from 72 to 82. Not great years for the Phillies, other about 80 World Series, right? He posted a 97-40 mark during the award-winning years. The six-time 20-game winner, Carlton, was inducted in the Hall of Fame in 1984. I remember when he was wrapping up his career with the Twins and Indians in 87. Steve Carlton, there you go. There you go. That's how you work through it. And I always say I love missing trivia questions because then I'll always know the answer. Weird time in baseball. A lot going on. So we'll leave you with this baseball quote. The great thing about baseball is there is a crisis every day. Gabe Paul, former baseball executive, general manager with the Reds, Houston Colt 45s, Cleveland, and my Yankees helped build part of the modern dynasty era out there, well, at the time in the 70s, not the Bill Watson into our modern with the Joe Torre era is what I'm thinking there too. So there you go. Oh, I'm looking up some notes on Gabe Paul. Kevin Conway played him in the ESPN television miniseries "The Bronx Is Burning." Oh, I love that series. It's a good series, worth a watch if you haven't seen it already. All right, that is it for now. We are out on Box Score Heroes today. You never know when we'll pop up, but also look for Behind the Bag live on YouTube, on the Box Score Heroes YouTube channel, and in the podcast form, me and Tom Dagnino coming to you every week talking baseball. We got some great My Favorite Baseballs lined up. We got some great Legends of the Wax Pack lined up. Stick around. We'll get through this baseball season together, folks. As long as Austin Riley's hitting bombs like that, we're going to have fun. All right. That's it. Play ball, my friends. Play ball.